new book, The Martyr's Oath, The Apprenticeship of a Homegrown Terrorist, chronicles the life of Mohamed Mansour Jabara, his comfortable upbringing in Niagara Falls, Ontario, to being recruited to carry out terrorist bombings for Al-Qaeda. The author, Stuart Bell, senior reporter of the National Post, joins me on the line to talk about this fascinating story. The book is published by Wiley, who published Stuart's previous bestseller, Cold Terror. It retails for $36.99 Canadian, $24.95 American. Please welcome once again to the commentary.ca, Stuart Bell. Good morning, Mr. Bell.
Hello.
Mohamed Mansour Jabara, it's an interesting story, and let's begin with the basics. Where was he born, and when?
Well, Mohamed's a 24-year-old Canadian. He was born in Kuwait, and after the Gulf War of 91, his father wanted to try and find a new home for the family. It was even after the Iraqi troops had left Kuwait, there was still a lot of instability and insecurity. And so he decided to move his family, his wife and four sons, to Canada. And they moved to Ontario, to St. Catharines, a very nice little middle-class neighborhood. He opened a gas station. But at the same time, he wanted his sons to be Canadian. He also was keen to have them maintain some sense of their Arab roots and culture, which is, you know, I think quite common among immigrants and certainly understandable. So he would send Mohammed, as well as his older brother, Abdul Rahman, back to Kuwait for summer visits with his family. And it was during one of those visits that Mohammed met up with a very extreme teacher named Suleiman Abu Ghaith, who had been, he had fought in Bosnia and returned to Kuwait. And he began to introduce Mohammed to these ideas of jihad. And it was after meeting this man that Mohammed decided this is what he wanted to do with his life. He wanted to be a mujahideen, a soldier of God. And he was 14 years old.
This is one of the interesting things, that this could have happened in any Canadian city.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. No, I don't think there's anything unique about St. Catharines here. It's just simply, this is the same kind of thing we're seeing all over the Western world, in fact. There have been a number of similar cases that have been popping up in other cities in Canada, in Vancouver, Ottawa, Windsor, and it's something that's happening in Europe. If you recall the July 7th bombings in London, I think there was a lot of people that were surprised to see that those that were responsible were, in fact, born in Britain for the most part.
And this, this notion of homegrown terrorists, these aren't... In the past, it used to be people who were impoverished or refugees, but these homegrown terrorists now, these are, like Jabara, these are middle-class, comfortable.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not even sure that it's necessarily true that in the past, terrorists tended to be impoverished. I think that's a bit of a misperception that many people hold, but if you go back even into the 70s to some of the more, well-known terrorist groups, you'll find that many of the people involved were, in fact, middle-class, university-educated in many cases. And, you know, of course, there are always people involved in these types of movements that are uneducated, that would meet that definition. But they often serve more subservial roles, sort of cannon fodder, suicide bombers. Those that are leading the charge tend to be more educated and higher income.
What do you think it is that draws them to terrorism? And convert? And to add to that question, is it a failure of security and counterterrorism officials that they're not recruiting these individuals to be on the good guy side, if you will?
Well, I think, you know, when you look at the Al-Qaeda and its affiliated organizations and the movement around the world, you'll see that young people are being drawn into this because of a very effective recruiting campaign that's gone on for, since about the 80s, when the Soviet war in Afghanistan became Islamicized, when people, volunteers, went there to help the Afghans defeat the Soviets, and began to recruit outsiders to come help. And there was an effective recruiting campaign that began at that time, and it continues to this day. And you can see how it works. It's a very, very sophisticated in its propaganda. Al-Qaeda has become probably as good a propaganda organization as a terrorist organization. They put out a regular stream of videos from the leadership figures dominated the internet. They've learned to use the internet as a very useful tool for drawing in young people, and in some cases even giving them the instruction on how to commit terrorist violence. And if you look at a lot of the videos, I mean, there's sort of a classic formula that they tend to follow, the recruiting videos. And they start with a setup where they will show a montage of American soldiers and Israeli soldiers, and they will say, you know, everywhere in the world, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Palestine, Muslims are being killed and oppressed. And then they'll say, well, why is that? And the answer is, well, it's because the West is out to dominate the Arab and Muslim world. There's a war against Islam. And finally, they'll have, well, the solution is for you, young man, to come and fight in defense of your people, in defense of the faith. And it's a very powerful message for young people that are impressionable. You know, in this case, Muhammad was 14 years old. He's trying to figure out the world, and he's sort of got one foot in the old world and one foot in Canada. And you know, unfortunately, a growing number of people are being drawn into this.
Was there anything in the both in law enforcement as well as culturally in this country that could have prevented this, or is this just something that was inevitable because of his background?
I think in retrospect, there are things that could have been done. When you look, you know, Muhammad was approached by a recruiter in Kuwait during his summer visits, but to some extent, those ideas were reinforced back in Canada, and it was in Canada that he used to hang around with people who had fought in various jihads in Bosnia and Afghanistan. So, you know, what were those people doing walking around freely that they were able to influence a young man? Muhammad was influenced, apparently, according to his father, by Saudi speakers who would come through the town to deliver their messages. What we know, you know, we know some speakers who come traveling to Canada from Saudi Arabia have a sort of Saudi ideology, can be quite extreme. Are those people that we should be letting into the country, or should we be screening them a little better beforehand? And, you know, Muhammad, if you look at the way he was indoctrinated, there was a very step-by-step approach. He was approached in Kuwait, as we discussed, and then they got him involved a little bit deeper. They said, well, why don't you do some fundraising? So Muhammad raised money in Canada for the Chechen Jihad. And, you know, is that something that security intelligence might have picked up on? Well, perhaps, maybe, I don't know, it's difficult to trace terrorist fundraising. But, you know, getting back to that, it's you were asking how does someone get into this, and I think when you look at Muhammad's case, you can see a very step-by-step approach, and I think this is the trick, this is the key that they use to draw people in, is you can't just walk up to somebody and say, hey, you want to be a terrorist, because they would never go for it. No rational person would. You would end up with the wrong kind of person if they agreed. So they do a very gradual process. It's not something that happens overnight. They introduced Muhammad to the ideas. They got him involved in fundraising. Then they said, well, why don't you go and do some training? You won't hurt anybody. It's just training. So he does the training, and then they say, well, why don't you go to the front lines and see combat? And so he goes and fights for the Taliban. And then they say, well, you know, you've done this kind of war training, but why don't you go and train for some urban war, i.e. terrorism? And before you know it, he's involved in terrorism, and he's planning the bombings of embassies in Southeast Asia.
So this was the mission that he was charged with, and how was he caught in that?
Yeah, he was trained by Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who we now know was the architect of 9/11, and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed sent Mohammed Jabbar, the Canadian, off to Malaysia, where he was working with a local group called Jemaah Islamiyah, which is an organization that's trying to create an Islamic state out of most of Southeast Asia. And their mission was to blow up American and Israeli embassies. They scouted out the embassies in the Philippines and decided they were just too secure. So they moved the operation to Singapore. And they scouted targets. Muhammad pretended to be a tourist. He dressed like a tourist. He carried a video camera around, but he was using the camera to actually record the targets that they were thinking of striking. But Singapore is a very, very security-conscious country, and the authorities there picked up on the plot after a number of weeks and began to arrest members of
what is that? And he swore that to bin Laden, did he?
Yeah, the martyr's oath is something that goes back a number of years. It's known as bayat, and it's a pledge of allegiance that members of al-Qaeda would make to bin Laden. And sometimes it was actually a written contract that you signed. In Mohammed's case, it was a verbal agreement. And what he did was he met with bin Laden near Kandahar, and they sat down, and he basically made an oath of allegiance to bin Laden and to his cause. And when you look at the wording of some of the oaths that were made during that time, and some of them are written down, we've seen some of them because they were seized in investigations, they're almost childlike in their sort of innocence. It's sort of like, it sounds like kids, you know, joining a backyard club or something, but according to the investigators I talked to, people that have taken that oath take it very, very seriously. They feel that if they break the oath, then they're breaking a promise to God.
We're talking with Stuart Bell from the National Post. His new book is called The Martyr's Oath, The Apprenticeship of a Homegrown Terrorist. It's published by Wiley, $36.99 Canadian. He sits in a jail cell now in New York State, does he?
Yeah, he does. When he was arrested in Oman, the Omanis phoned up CSIS, and two CSIS agents flew over to the Gulf, and they brought him back to Ontario. And they spent about 2 weeks with him, interviewing him. He had a lot of information. He had met bin Laden four times. He had been trained by Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who was known by then to be behind 9/11. He got sick when he was training at the training camps in Afghanistan, and his doctor was Ayman al-Zawahiri, the number two in al-Qaeda. So he knew quite a lot, and he passed this information on to CSIS. But he also knew, I think, that the Americans wanted him. So he decided to barter with his knowledge, and he negotiated and signed a deal with the Americans, with the U.S. Department of Justice, to go into custody in the U.S. to testify and to cooperate with the FBI. And so one day the Americans flew up to Toronto Island Airport, and he got aboard and flew to the States, and he's been there ever since. And he's kind of in a middle, kind of a waiting stage, I guess, where he's agreed to plead guilty to charges, but the sentencing is going to depend on how happy the Americans are with his level of cooperation.
The one thing that I can't get away from is that he's still a young man, so he conceivably could have a future beyond prison, could he not?
Well, absolutely, and he's a smart young man, too. I mean, he's not a stupid young kid. This is a guy who did very well in school. He had very good grades. He's physically able. He's, you know, and this is something that we often overlook in terrorists. We see terrorists for, you know, for what they are, really, which is people that are committed to violence in the name of their cause, which is wrong. But often there are people who just have very strong belief and take it to the ultimate extreme. And they tend to be people, in my experience, who can otherwise be half-decent people. They have jobs, they have families, they're very committed to the things they believe in. It's just that they take it way too far.
You talked to his parents, and I'm assuming they still live in southern Ontario, do they?
They have a home there, but they haven't been back in over a year. They've been living in Kuwait, and I'm not sure exactly why.
I see.
Yeah.
When you talk to them, what was their reaction towards their son? Obviously, they still loved him, but were they shocked? Were they embarrassed? Were they sad?
Yeah, I think all three of the terms you just described. You know, they never intended this for their son or their other son. We haven't mentioned that Mohammed's brother was also an al-Qaeda terrorist who was killed in Saudi Arabia. This is not something they wanted, and you know, I remember talking to Mansour, his father, about this, and yes, Mansour has very strong political and religious views, but he wanted his children to, you know, to raise his children the same way, but he was hoping that his kids could serve their belief by being doctors, by being engineers. This is not something he wanted, and the kids deliberately misled their father. They didn't tell him what they were doing. They told him they were going to Pakistan to study religion, and I think they knew that if their father knew what they were up to, he would not
effective recruitment and the tools, the technology tools that they use, and how in-depth they get and how just how these plots unfold. Why do you think it is, and I'm assuming that recruitment is going on as we speak, is it, or?
Well, it's certainly a growing trend. I mean, there's a growing number of people worldwide and in Canada, according to the intelligence reporting I've seen, that are being drawn into this extreme brand of belief, yes.
And why do you think it is, then, that we haven't had an attack of the magnitude of September 11th since 4 years ago?
Well, I think it's not that there haven't been some initial attempts anyway. We know that bin Laden has named Canada as a worthy target, and the police and intelligence have been saying quite openly now for the last little bit that they believe they have interrupted attempts to at least organize or to plan attacks in Canada. So, and the consensus, unfortunately, seems to be that it's only a matter of time before someone tries anyway.
Stuart, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.